Mr. Mead? We're ready.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Muhammad Ahmed, and I am representing the petitioner in this appeal, Aureolus Bivens. Your Honors, this is an appeal of the denial of a habeas petition brought by an Illinois state prisoner under Title 28 of the United States Code, Section 2254. District Court granted a certificate of appealability in which it identified two issues for this appeal. The primary issue before this court is whether the District Court abused its discretion in disposing of Mr. Bivens' petition, which featured an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, given that the court only had a partial record of Mr. Bivens' trial proceedings, from which it could not obtain a sufficient understanding of what occurred at the trial as a whole.
How could you do that? How could you reconstruct this trial 25 years later or whatever it is?
I'll admit it might be somewhat difficult, Your Honor, but through the use of an evidentiary hearing, petitioner would submit that it is possible to take a very good step in that direction and to reconstruct the missing portions of the trial transcript.
Didn't they attempt to do that?
Yes, Your Honor. There are sufficient things in the record that show that the state took steps towards trying to reconstruct the record, but petitioner would submit that, well, number one, we don't know exactly to what extent the state did exactly what it says it did in those status reports. I think that's what the court is referring to. And number two, I think that if the people involved were to be able to be brought before the court and their memory tested in a evidentiary hearing in front of the court, things might be different. Now, this court has jurisdiction over this appeal pursuant to sections 1291 and 2253 of Title 28. Mr. Bivens is asking this court to vacate the denial of his habeas petition, remand the matter back to the trial court to perform a proper Strickland analysis after holding an evidentiary hearing to essentially fill in the gaps of the missing trial transcripts.
How many sentences is he serving right now? Still has that murder sentence? He's serving that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Other ones? He's got some robbery convictions, sentences that he's serving.
I believe he is currently only serving two, one under the murder and one for the escape that's at issue in this trial.
No robbery sentences?
I think the robbery that occurred as a part of the murder, yes, I think he may be still under that sentence. Now, the standard of review in this case is an abuse of discretion, but that should not foreclose this court from correcting the error that occurred below. In this court's earlier opinion of Simmental v. Mastriciano, this court clarified that in the context of situations like this, where a court exercises its discretion improperly under Rule 5 of the habeas.
Can I go back to that? My question about the other charges.
Yes, sir.
Wasn't he also charged with other offenses growing out of the escape?
He was, Your Honor.
Some robbery charges there.
Yes, Your Honor, but.
And convicted of all of those, wasn't he?
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct, but he appealed that directly, and through that appellate decision, several of those offenses were vacated.
And was a transcript of the record produced in those appeals? Trial court?
The transcript of the appellate?
No, of the trial court.
Not
the appeal.
Well, not to my knowledge, Your Honor. The trial court transcripts issue really never came to be an issue until he actually filed his habeas petition, because at that point Mr. Bivens had always had a copy of the trial transcripts, but due to a flood in his jail they were destroyed. So
the other, I mean, there were other defendants, I assume they appealed too. So there's just no indication that they, in other cases there would be a copy of that trial transcript.
Well, the co-defendants, the co-escapees, Your Honor, never went to trial. They all pled guilty to the offense of escape. And they were actually in the custody of the state before Mr. Bivens' trial took place. And therefore, it is Mr. Bivens' contention that his attorney was, you know, objectively unreasonable to go and to investigate the potential exculpatory testimony of those co-escapees.
He escaped and was out for about 4 days.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did he, during that time, come in and say, hey, I escaped, but they forced me to do it and turn himself in?
No, Your Honor. In fact, in the record, it shows that Mr. Bivens was, well during the escape, he communicated to an officer that he really didn't want to be a part of it. And he was actually trying to allay that officer's fears. And at that point, the officer said to him, well, you know, we're going to kick your rear end anyway, so you better think of something quick. And at that point, which really isn't at issue, but he decided these Cook County guards will hurt me when I go back, and that's probably the reason for that four-day delay that Your Honor pointed out. Now, as I said before, Your Honor, when Mr. Bivens filed his habeas petition, he did not have a copy of the trial transcripts. But the respondent did. And actually, the respondent held on to that copy of the trial transcripts for an entire year after the petition had been filed. And despite the significance of that, a full record carries in the disposition of an ineffective assistance of trial counsel claim, respondent never took any steps to make the court aware that it had the full trial transcripts, that never told Mr. Bivens' counsel that they had the full trial transcripts. They never even copied it. Instead, unfortunately, they sent it back to the clerk of Cook County, who promptly lost it, and no one has been able to track it down since. Now, case law provides that an ineffective assistance of counsel claim requires a reviewing court to assess a trial in its entirety. And an adequate record is imperative to accomplish that. And therefore, the disposition of Mr. Bivens' habeas claim, his ineffectiveness claim specifically, required a complete trial transcript, an adequate substitute, or at minimum, an evidentiary hearing where the missing factual details surrounding his claim could be presented for the district court's review. And it's important to understand what distinguishes Mr. Bivens' situation from those of other habeas petitioners who complain that they need a full trial transcript, is that here, the district court actually stated on the record, I think twice, that the partial transcripts and the substitutes offered up by the respondent were simply inadequate to allow the court to engage in a meaningful review. So definitely the full transcripts were necessary, and the court had recognized as much. Now, according to Strickland, counsel has a duty to make reasonable investigations or to make a reasonable decision that makes particular investigations unnecessary. So in reviewing the reasonableness of a decision not to investigate, a court must be able to assess all the circumstances surrounding that decision. And the second prong of Strickland is obviously the prejudice standard, and that required Mr. Bivens to show under Strickland that there is a reasonable probability that but for his counsel's unprofessional errors, the outcome of the trial would be different. Without the complete trial transcript, the district court could not properly evaluate what the proceeding itself, let alone what would be different. Therefore, Your Honors, this court is Mr. Bivens is asking this court to vacate the order denying the habeas petition and to remand the case with the instructions to hold an evidentiary hearing. And at that evidentiary hearing, factual evidence concerning his trial counsel's reasonableness can be presented. And the district court can directly assess the credibility of the inmate witnesses who provided affidavits. As for the second issue on appeal, Mr. Bivens is content to stand on the briefs on that, and unless this court has questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you. Ms. O'Connell?
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Erin O'Connell on behalf of the respondent warden. As we set forth in our brief, there are two grounds on which this court should affirm the district court's judgment. The first is that petitioner procedurally defaulted his claim. The second is that his claim is completely without merit. Given the brevity of my time today, I'm going to focus on the merits of the claim and specifically on the antecedent question of whether the district court abused its discretion in resolving the merits of the claim based on the record that was before it. As this court's questions have noted, the court did absolutely everything that was possible to reconstruct the trial transcripts here. There is nothing that the defendant asked the trial court, the district court, to do that he was denied the opportunity to do. The district court granted him great leeway to, in effect, create his own new defense. So even though he's missing certain testimony of defense witnesses, what we have in front of us now is the testimony of all of the witnesses that petitioner claims would have supported his compulsion defense.
What did Judge Gottschall say about the possibility of an evidentiary hearing?
He initially requested an evidentiary hearing to reconstruct the transcripts only. And the district court denied that on the ground that under Rule 5, just because there are missing transcripts, the state can come in with narrative summaries that can replace the testimony from the original transcripts. So the court denied the hearing to reconstruct that. And then over the course of the proceedings, we actually submitted 4 days of the trial and sentencing hearing. And then with respect to the remaining testimony, there were narrative summaries provided in the parties' briefs, particularly defendant's brief on his post-conviction appeal summarizing the testimony of the correctional officers. So by the time it had concluded, basically there was nothing left for an evidentiary hearing to accomplish in terms of reconstructing the trial transcript. And he's never requested an evidentiary hearing on any other basis. So he has never requested a hearing to present the testimony of, for example, trial counsel, although he did receive the opportunity to depose trial counsel, and ultimately he decided not to do so. So his claim right now that he deserves an evidentiary hearing to present such testimony is completely meritless because he really never requested it in the district court and didn't even take preliminary steps that the district court allowed. Furthermore, this court's precedent makes clear that a district court does not abuse its discretion when it relies on alternative sources, when those sources are adequate to resolve the claims at issue. And here we plainly have an adequate record because everything that bears on petitioner's defense of compulsion is either in the original transcripts that have been reconstructed or it's available in narrative summary form. So we have the testimony of all of the correctional officers who saw that petitioner when he was still on this maximum security unit. 2 of the officers saw him with a gun himself at that point. We know also that he was one of the first of all of these inmates to get a correctional officer's uniform, strongly suggesting that petitioner is not an unwilling participant here. He's actually a leader of this. He's the first one to put on the correctional officer's uniform and basically rushes out before anyone else can really follow with inmate Hill to accomplish his escape. We have all of this circumstantial testimony. In addition, the 4 days that petitioner spent after he had escaped tend to show that petitioner desired to escape and was enjoying his freedom and not that petitioner was browbeaten, in a sense, into making the escape.
What percentage of the transcript was lost?
What we are missing is opening statements and the first state witnesses. Those are the key correctional officer's testimony and also testimony regarding petitioner's confession. As of now, we don't have any indication of what was in that confession. Then the final 2 days of trial, which would have been the state's final witnesses and then the entire defense case in chief, is also missing. But every attempt was made to reconstruct that defense case in chief. In fact, counsel on both sides spoke to the judge, the prosecuting attorneys, and both defense counsel read them the names of every witness and attempted to elicit some sort of a recollection as to what the nature of the testimony was, perhaps suggesting its relative marginal significance. None of these parties could recall anything about who these witnesses were. So those are the portions that are missing. This court can easily resolve petitioner's claim on the basis of prejudice. He claims that counsel was ineffective because counsel didn't call Daniels, Greer, Hill, and what we have now are deposition transcripts setting forth their full testimony. Ultimately, none of this testimony supported petitioner's compulsion defense. The factual basis for his defense was that he was sitting on the couch when the Reginald Mahaffey came up to him with a gun and said, "We're going to escape. We need you to assist." None of the inmates that have been deposed said that's what happened. In fact, Daniels doesn't even agree that petitioner was on the couch. He says that petitioner was on the telephone when Daniels and two others went up to him and threatened him. Greer agrees that petitioner was on the couch, although Greer claims that it was himself and not Reginald Mahaffey that made the threat at that time. These inconsistencies are absolutely fatal to what was already an inherently implausible defense. Defendant's counsel plainly adopted a reasonable strategy, as these deposition transcripts make clear, in basing the defense solely on petitioner's own testimony. By putting petitioner up there and not calling any of the inmates, there was no chance that these inmates would testify differently to petitioner, so his claim was resolved solely on the basis of petitioner's own credibility. However, there were serious risks in calling the inmates because they're incredible and unreliable and, as the deposition transcripts show, prone to falsehood.
On this question of waiver, I gather it's the law in Illinois that ineffective assistance has to be raised on direct appeal or it's waived. Is that right?
That's correct, although there is an exception under Illinois law. So in this
case, there's a different rule in the federals.
And actually, Illinois has moved somewhat away from that rule. Basically, under Illinois law, there is a requirement that you raise it on direct appeal or it's waived. And the appellate court here did clearly rely on that basis for waiver. However, there is an exception. If the claim goes outside of the record and depends on extra record evidence, then in Illinois also it can be brought in a post-conviction proceeding. And the state appellate court, after it found the claim waived, then considered whether petitioner had met this separate requirement and also held that he had failed to do so. Just as a final point, in the reply brief, petitioner contends that the state has somehow forfeited its ability to rely on procedural default. However, I would note that in the very case that petitioner has cited in his reply brief at page 3, it makes clear that as a prevailing party, the respondent in this case would have been in error to have filed a cross appeal and, in fact, can defend the district court's judgment on any basis appearing in the record. So we would urge the court to find that this claim is both defaulted and meritless and that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connell. Mr. Med?
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the procedural default issue, there's no way this court should go ahead and even reach that issue because the district court changed her finding as to procedural default and explicitly found that the claim was not procedurally defaulted. And moreover, that that opinion, that order, isn't under this court's jurisdiction to change at this point. Now, regarding the adequacy of the discovery that Mr. Bivens was allowed to undertake in the district court, that discovery was aimed at his actual innocence claim at the time. It was not aimed at the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, and therefore, just because he was granted that limited discovery, that should be no barrier to this court finding that an evidentiary hearing would help flesh out the elements of the ineffectiveness claim for the district court's review. Furthermore, I'd just like to repeat that the district court explicitly rejected the substitutes that were offered by the respondents for the missing trial transcripts. Another point is that, you know, respondent makes a big issue out of the fact that the testimony of the inmates now, almost 20-odd years later, differed in minute details. But the fact of the matter is, even at his trial, the testimony of the officers differed in great deal. And I believe there was only one officer who said something to the effect that I believe Bivens had what appeared to be a gun, whereas several other officers admitted that they never saw Mr. Bivens with any weapon. In conclusion, thank you, Your Honors.
In conclusion, go ahead.
In conclusion, I just ask that the court vacate the petition and remand. Thank you.
Mr. Med, you and your firm took this case by appointment?
Yes.
And you have the thanks of the court and your firm as well for accepting the appointment.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.
You want to ask something, or you're okay? Oh, I thought you